It is 1:45 p.m. We are back on the record for the OPAPA 23-002 formal hearing.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Mr. Rosado, your next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. Just for the record, I'll say I'm Josh Walsh. We're going to ask Ms. Bailey from the Contractors Licensing Board to testify next.
Okay.
And she's present.
Okay.
Ms. Bailey?
Please raise your right hand. You state your name.
Nita Bailey.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Ms. Bailey.
Good afternoon.
I think we've met before, but my name is Joshua Walsh. I'm one of the lawyers working with GMI Edison in this matter. Can I start by asking you to tell me where you currently work and what your position is?
I work at the Contractors License Board as Investigator Supervisor.
How long have you been the Investigator Supervisor?
For 4 years.
Before that, did you work at the Contractors Licensing Board?
Yes.
What was your position there?
Investigator.
And when we hear the word investigator, could you please tell our hearing officer, what is it that you investigate? What's in your world of investigation?
We're investigating complaints, consumer complaints that are submitted to our office. We also like reviewing applications for contractor's license.
When an application comes in and you do that investigation, are there procedures that you follow?
For the licensing or the complaint?
You have procedures for both?
Yes, sir.
You generally try to follow your procedures?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the... Or have you had any work investigating the conveyor belt baggage system at the Guam International Airport?
Yes.
Can you tell me how that came about? How was it that you got involved with investigating
that? There was a complaint filed to our office by GMI, and we received the complaint. And then we reviewed the complaint, so we found that there was some kind of violations. So I assigned it to the investigator, Mr. Marcus Finonia.
And the violations were about what?
Unlicensed.
Doing contractor work without a contractor's license, is that fair to say?
Yes.
Do you remember who the complaint was about? What company?
GMI.
Who made the complaint? Who was it about?
It's a complaint by GMI against Menzies.
Okay. And has the Contractors Licensing Board made a determination that a contractor's license was required to perform the work at that baggage system?
Yes.
And the license was required?
Yes.
Do you know if Menzies had a license when they were previously working on that system?
At that time, when the complaint was filed to our office, they were not licensed.
They've since obtained a license, is that right?
Since then, they have.
Were you involved in the process of the granting of the license to Menzies?
Yes, sir.
How were you involved in that process?
Just to review the documentations for the application of the responsible management employee.
Do you remember when that application came in?
Maybe around, for the RME. Maybe somewhere around March.
Of this year?
Yes.
Okay. If I showed you a picture of the RME license and the Menzies license, would that help you remember about when their application may have come in?
Yes.
So just for the record, I'm just going to show one of...
Might have them. Are those Morris?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. So Menzies has some exhibits. If you look through it, a couple pages in, ma'am, you'll see Exhibit B and Exhibit A and B.
Exhibit B?
A as an alpha, B as a vapor. You can look also at the screen, ma'am. Does that kind of look familiar?
Yes.
Okay. Would you agree with me that this license was issued on June 15th, 2023?
Yes.
All right. And that's the one for the RME, right, ma'am?
This is the one for the company.
Okay.
The RME is... CLB 23-1830, so I could not clearly remember what date was the RME license.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. 2023 is sort of what I really want to focus on.
Correct.
Would you agree with me that Menzies did not have a license before this date?
Yes.
Okay. So if Menzies was responding to and performing work on an airport bid from October of 2021, they would not have had a license at that time. Is that right?
Yes.
I have no further questions for Ms. Baker.
Airport? Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Baker. We've met before. I'm Attorney Brennan.
Yes, Attorney.
Last time we met, your counsel, has said that the volume kind of affects. So please let me know if I'm loud or
anything?
Okay. So I think you testified that in October 2021 or September 2021, the complaint related to Menzies was filed for work done at the airport, unlicensed work.
Sorry, what was the question?
Sure. So I'm just trying to make sure it's clear. In September of 2021 or October of 2021, that's when the initial complaint was filed with the CLB related to Menzies doing work at the airport. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, and the CLB, the board that is, did not make a decision until March of this year on that complaint. Is that correct? The board?
Yes.
Okay. And normally the process, as I understand it, the regulations for the CLB require for a complaint, for example, for a site visit, if one is needed to be conducted.
Yes.
Okay. That site visit was conducted September 2022 on or about, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, may I just ask, what is the status of the complaint at the COB?
The board had decided to issue a citation.
Okay. And has that, did Menzies provide a notice of defenses and request for hearing on that citation?
Yes.
And as far as you know, would you be involved in the setting of the hearing at the COB? Does that fall within your purview as investigator supervisor?
Actually, it was forwarded to the Office of the Attorney General, so legal counsel said that they will let us know.
And I don't, just to be clear, I'm not asking about anything that was said to you by your legal counsel. I just want to make sure, as far as you know, in your role as investigator supervisor, no hearing has been held on that citation. As of today's date?
No hearing.
Okay. And then in terms of the actual investigation conducted, you recall you were deposed previously at a Rosanna Walsh and Torres law firm?
Yes.
And during that testimony, you stated Mr. Fenotia handled the actual investigation, reviewing the scope of work, for example?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Bailey. I have no further questions for you today.
Mr. Johnson?
Good afternoon, Ms. Bailey. I just have a few questions.
You mentioned that there are procedures that must be taken at the CLB, or followed at the CLB, when a complaint is filed. Is that true?
Yes.
Can you walk me through the procedures that are followed when a complaint is filed?
The standard operating procedure?
Yes.
Okay, so when the complaint is filed, we have to stamp it, receive, record it in our logbook, then assign a case number, review the case. The supervisor or the director would review the case, and then after we found that there is merit on the case, we assign an investigator to the case. The investigator will also review, and then after the investigator assigned review it, then the investigator will send a notice to appear to the party that is being complained, for them to get their side of the complaint, to answer to the complaint. And then after that, when they responded and it's reviewed, then we have to next step, if there is violation or of the rules, then we conduct our site investigation. After we finish with the site investigation, we submit our report to the director, and then it goes to the board, and then the board will review the investigation, and the board decides if the actual violation was committed, and then the board will take disciplinary action to that complaint, to the complainant.
And at what point is a hearing held?
Pardon, sir?
Is a hearing part of the process?
A hearing was held, yes, sir.
At what point in the process is a hearing held? You didn't mention a hearing in anything you just said.
Oh, sorry. After the board take a disciplinary action, like a citation, it will be served to the party. Then the party will be given a notice of defense, and then they will have 15 days to respond if they're contesting the violation, and then a hearing will be scheduled.
What happens at the hearing?
As of this case, the hearing is not scheduled yet.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I'm speaking generally speaking. When there's a hearing that's held at the CLB, mm-hmm. What happens during that hearing?
During the hearing, of course, there will be a hearing officer, and then both parties will present their case to the board.
And then what happens when they presented their case to the board?
Then the board will make a decision and order what will be the outcome of the hearing.
And then after that?
Then that's when will be like the case will be closed.
So this case, can you walk us through what happened in this case? In this case, referring to the complaint that was filed against Menzies by JMI.
We follow the SOP.
Okay. Has a hearing been held yet?
The hearing has not been held yet because we are waiting. It was forwarded to legal, and then we were informed that once AG could assign a hearing officer, then a hearing will be conducted.
Has a hearing officer been assigned to this case yet?
Not yet, sir.
Okay, so has a hearing been held yet?
Not yet, sir.
Okay. Has the board then made a decision after a hearing yet?
Has not made a decision.
Okay. So the case is not closed yet, then, is it?
It's not closed yet.
Okay. So there's just a citation that's been issued?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that's not a final decision in this case, is it?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Is that a final decision in this case, the citation?
No, sir.
Okay. So no final decision has happened yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Was a notice to appear issued here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you know, who issued that notice to appear?
It was issued by executive director.
Okay. And were you present for the when they, was there a meeting held based on that notice to appear?
I was not present when they appeared because the investigator arranged for the meeting.
Yeah, which investigator arranged for that meeting?
Marcos Finorma.
Okay. So you were not present for that meeting?
I was not present.
Okay. Do you know who was present for that meeting?
I believe in the first was Payne or what's the... I believe there were two meetings.
Two meetings?
Yes.
Okay. When were those meetings held?
At the office, CA.
Were you present for either one of those meetings?
I was not.
Okay. Are recordings usually taken of these meetings?
I believe there were no recordings.
You believe there were no recordings?
Yes.
Okay, why do you believe there were no recordings?
At that time, I was still like on the COVID stage. So our office, we were just in a split shift. So I was in the afternoon. I believe that shift, so I was not present at the office when the meeting was held.
So if you believe the meeting was held in the morning?
I'm not sure if it was afternoon, but I was not present.
Okay. Can you turn to Exhibit E in the packet in front of you? Have you ever seen this document before?
No, sir.
Okay. I will represent to you that this is a declaration of Cecil Orsini that was, filed in the Superior Court of Guam on March 24, 2023. And it was also filed with the Office of Public Accountability by John Dell International, Inc., DBA, JMI Edison, as an attachment to its May 5, 2023 comments on agency report in OPA PA 23-002, which is this case.
Mr. Hearing Officer, if I may, at this point, can I'd like to make an objection as to relevancy and just ask for, if I could, ask for a proffer as to why the declaration of the executive director of the CLB, who was not the executive director at the time this protest, is relevant for exploration in this case.
Let's hear it.
I'm just...
If I may comment, at least, I mean, this was submitted by JMI to the OPA in this case, too, so as part of their comments to the agency report. So clearly they felt that it was relevant, at least at that point.
Okay, and so what are you trying to elicit?
I think it'll be clear once we go towards paragraph 7, 8, and 9, where Mr. Orsini, who has, I guess, been a problem at least the last proceeding here in front of the OPA, has issued this declaration under penalty of perjury where he claims that he was present for this investigation meeting, and he also states that Ms. Bailey was present for this meeting as well, and that certain things happened during that meeting.
But again, obviously, I understand our rules of evidence are relaxed, but
well, I just want to know what's the relevance.
I think it's relevant if JMI is submitting declarations that are perjured.
All right. That is utterly ridiculous, and to challenge the credibility of
the whole
document.
That's the whole purpose of this hearing.
And you call the person who signed the document.
No, she was the person who wrote the document claims that he was present for a meeting and that she was present for that meeting.
And
she's going to say that
she
wasn't. And that's, I'd like to present her.
So why don't you ask the person?
I'd like to present her with this statement that this person has provided.
She just said she wasn't there.
Yeah,
is this factual issue being currently in front of the Superior Court?
No, this issue is in front of the Superior Court. This relates to the CLB, and we've maintained throughout the entire course of this that the issue of whether or not a CLB license is required, which is discussed in this declaration as well, is an issue for the CLB and not for the OPA at this point.
So then what's the relevance here?
Because
if your position is in your trial brief
it's
that
still been
this
brought up.
OPA,
but
when was it brought up?
It's been brought up throughout the entire course of this proceeding. There have been several claims made during the course of this, even during her direct examination by Mr. Walsh, that there was a determination made by the CLB that CLB license is required in order to do work at the airport. This declaration was submitted to the OPA by JMI, claiming that this supported the fact that a license is required at the OPA, and so I'd like to attack the veracity of this document.
Okay, I'll allow it.
Sorry, Ms. Bailey. If you could turn to paragraph 7. Could you please read that?
I do not recall the exact date upon which the meeting occurred, but pursuant to the notice to appear, meeting was conducted between myself, Ms. Nita Bailey, and two or three members of a team from MENSIS. I also recall another investigator named Marcus in the office assisting with the investigation and attending the MENSIS meeting.
Were you present at that meeting?
I was not present.
Okay. If you could turn to paragraph 9, please. Paragraph 8, it's the same page. Can you read that paragraph? It's paragraph 8, just under the paragraph that you just read out loud.
MENSIS explained they did not need a license because they had a master electrician and they simply were operating under whatever authority he provided. Ms. Bailey explained to them that they needed a license and that they did not have one and that the use of a master electrician's license was not appropriate. MENSIS requested to adjourn the meeting and get together again to discuss the issues. Everyone agreed the follow-up meeting.
To the best of your knowledge, did that ever occur?
Yes.
Do you know why Mr. Orsini would say that happened?
I have no idea.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have for the rest of this document, at least. And I have no further questions for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director?
Get some help. Ma'am, on the March 2021 board meeting, I think we were talking about that earlier. I just want to be clear. The citation that you described that was issued to MENSIS, do you stand by that citation? I mean, do you have a problem with that citation? Is there anything we should tell the hearing officer about that citation?
The citation was issued by the board members.
Mm-hmm. It was based upon an investigation you helped conduct?
Yes.
Do you stand by the results of that investigation?
Yes.
I understand that we were examining the declaration of Mr. Orsini. I want to be clear about your views on things, okay? Just your views on the matter. Do you believe a contractor's license is required for the performance of this work?
Yes.
Objection, Your Honor, relevance.
I'll join that objection.
Okay, so if I could just, I'll respond, but I mean, he was asking her questions about somebody else's declaration. She is the chief investigator. I'd like to know what the investigator's role is. Same way as you would ask a police officer if you believe the murder weapon was a murder weapon, you know, she's the one doing the investigator. Ultimately, there's another
charge. Let her answer it.
But she answered it, so thank you. I understand you testified earlier about the Attorney General's office would let you know about a future hearing. You remember that testimony?
Yeah.
Are you aware of an opinion by the Attorney General's office saying that a license was required?
Yes.
You were describing their standard operating procedures earlier and that disciplinary action could be taken. Has disciplinary action been taken against MENSIS?
No.
Did the citation come with any punishment?
Yes.
Is that punishment under appeal?
Yes.
Are you aware of any court decision or any board decision or anything that has invalidated the citation that was issued? Okay, so if I understand it correctly, again, your word, the citation is being appealed, but it's still a citation that's in place. Is that a correct way to say it?
Correct.
Do you remember what the punishment was that is on appeal? What was the punishment that was issued?
There's a monetary fine.
Do you recall the amount?
$300,000.
And that's under appeal?
Yes.
Did you ever have conversations with Mr. Orsini about his making a declaration that would be used in the litigation? Did you ever confer with him about any of that?
No.
Did you ever have meetings with Mr. Orsini about the Menzies license situation?
Yes.
Did you ever have meetings with Menzies about the Menzies license situation?
No.
So you never met with Menzies individuals?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody? Okay. Only your executive director?
Yes.
Do you know if Menzies individuals had any meetings with anybody from the CLB?
I'm not sure.
It seems like you were pretty confident there was a meeting with Mr. Familia. Does that sound right?
On the NTA, yes, I am confident because that is our process.
Okay. And who does Mr. Filonia report to?
To me.
Okay, so your investigation division had a meeting with Menzies, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And your investigation division had a meeting with Menzies, and they've also, you as part of the investigation division, have discussed things with the director, is that correct?
Correct.
Do you know how many contractors on Guam exist that are under the purview of the Contractors Licensing Board?
Probably 900.
Do you know how many complaints get made about contractors in a given year?
Maybe about 60.
Okay, and how many new license applications does your investigation division have to deal with?
New license application, probably about 50.
Okay. Has Mr. Orsini had meetings with contractors and investigators in the same room at the same time? Has that ever happened?
Yes.
Okay. But for this one, in this declaration, for the two paragraphs, maybe he wasn't involved in a meeting specifically with you and Menzies. That's what we've developed here, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. But the citation is still a citation, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. I have nothing further.
Anyone else?
Just one question on that redirect. So you mentioned this case followed the SOPs for the CLB. Was there any reason why your investigation division waited for an attorney general's opinion to present your findings to the board?
It was the executive director that recommended, we wait for the opinion.
But to be clear, there's nothing in the SOPs that requires your investigation division to look for an opinion from the Office of the Attorney General before issuing a citation, correct?
It's not there, but it was the executive director.
In the 4 years that you've been investigator supervisor, have you ever waited for an attorney general's opinion before issuing a notice of a citation?
I don't have experience.
And do you think that your executive director, do you think that your executive director's decision to wait for an OAG opinion had anything to do with the other issues the CLB was faced with in 2022? For example, wasn't it discovered last year, 2022, that the CLB's C68 subspecialty license category was not properly adopted in accordance with the administrative adjudication law?
Yes.
And did that have anything to do with the executive director going outside of the standard operating procedure and waiting for an Office of the Attorney General opinion before issuing a notice of citation, if you know?
I guess he will answer first.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. I have nothing further.
Anybody else?
Nothing further.
Okay, real quick. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I may, just real quick. Does the CLB have an attorney? Do you have counsel? You know who the lawyers for the CLB are?
As of today, we were just informed that our counsel the last day would be October 17.
Who is the counsel?
Sandra Miller.
Okay, but what firm does she work with? You know how the airport has the Areola law firm? Who is your law firm at the Contractors Licensing Board?
The Office of the
Attorney General.
Yes.
Do you think it's odd to wait for advice from your counsel before making decisions for your government agency? Is that pretty common, to wait for your lawyer's advice?
It's common.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Okay. So Sandra Mill has been the contractor's licensing board throughout since 2021?
It was a thumb killer, and she took over, I think, around March or February of last year.
So, I mean, the lawyers, they'll either write a nice letter, right, like the Attorney General did, or they might give you sort of email opinion advice, right? Do you have that experience? In other words, it's more formal, or sometimes you might shoot an email to Sandra. Would she answer that?
Yes, sir.
Have you read the Attorney General's legal opinion that required a license?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you agree with it?
Yes, sir.
Now, what makes this particular, job require, what specifically makes it require a C-13 license, according to your opinion?
Based upon the physical, investigation of the airport layout and everything, so we determined that there are, high voltage electrical boxes and electric motors that's connected to the conveyor. So we believe that it is a dangerous kind of equipment. It has to be a licensed person that needs to operate those.
Okay. As far as you could tell, that dangerous situation, that equipment has been there as far as you know, as long as you know. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
I have nothing further, Ms. Fabian. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
What do we got next?
So, can we take a very short break? I just want to confirm with other counsel and see where we are. And think. Just take a minute.
Yeah. We're off the record at 2:17 p.m.
Let's do it.
We're back on the record at 2:23 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. So at this time, subject to the limited possibility there may need to be a rebuttal witness, which I can't fathom right now, but subject to just that request, the appellants are going to close our case at this point. I'll say two other things, though. We do have an agreement with the airport that the airport's going to take the testimony of Mr. Elot, who's present and here. So our understanding is we're closing so that they can put Mr. Elot on. Also, our office had prepared with the OPA's assistance a subpoena for several CLB people. We're going to release Mr. Ciriaco Sanchez from his subpoena, but Mr. Fenonia, who's present, I understand both the airport and Menzies want to ask some questions of. So we keep him around. But with that, Your Honor, we'll close our case in chief.
Okay. I guess the airport's on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. For our first witness, we call Mr. Elow, the principal of Jim.
Hi, Eduardo Elow.
Solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Good afternoon, Mr. Elow.
Good afternoon.
I've examined you before. I'm Attorney Brennan from the Ariel firm. I just have a few questions for you today. If I could ask you to pull up, or first, could I just, for the record, what is your position, JMI?
I'm the president of JMI Edison.
And in your capacity, you filed a protest with the airport related to 2021 RFP. I ask you to please turn the exhibit binder for the airport in front of Exhibit J. May I ask, do you recognize this document?
Yeah.
I'll just represent it. If you could confirm what you're looking at is a letter on airport letterhead addressed to your council dated March 27, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually not going to ask you about the letter itself. I'm going to ask you to turn to the last page of Exhibit J. And it should be page 801 at the bottom.
It's on the last page of J?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Now, may I ask, sir, do you recognize this document?
Yes.
I've taken your testimony related to this before, but not in front of this hearing officer, so I apologize if this seems repetitive, but is this, in fact, a draft document you submitted to the then executive director of the CLB, Mr. Buddy Orsini?
Yes, I believe so.
And you prepared this document?
Yes.
Okay, did you prepare it relative to your protest to the original 2021 RFP?
Yes.
And just, we're going over some covered ground, but this was related to your allegation that certain licensing was required of the provider of baggage management infrastructure support services of the airport's baggage handling system.
Yes.
I'm going to direct you to the decision portion at draft paragraph 2, which you completed. Do you see that?
Yes.
So in that paragraph, you were asking Mr. Orsini to find that the airport needs to have specialty contractor licenses C-13 and C-15, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And as the consumer for the Contractors License Board complaint, you were kept abreast of the CLB's investigation throughout its entire, as it went on, right?
Not to my satisfaction.
Understood.
You know, because during that time, COVID was hitting, and they, like Nita had said, they were on a skeleton crew.
But they eventually did make findings in your case in March of this year. Is that correct?
But isn't it long enough?
Yeah, but isn't it true, sir, that the CLB only determined that a C-13 license was required?
That's correct.
And not a C-15 license?
Yes.
So at least as to one of the bases of your complaint, 18 months after you made it, they did decline to act on that basis. They didn't find that C-15 was required.
I believe so. Maybe they did not conduct their investigation thoroughly.
Well, let me just ask, no citation is issued for related to C-15.
I understand.
Only C-13.
Mm-hmm.
At any point, did you also allege that one of the subspecialties of C-68 was also required of the mentees?
Yes.
And is it fair to say, due to circumstances that we are aware of, no C-68 citation was issued?
That's correct.
And again, after the almost two-year investigation, the CLB declined to issue a notice of citation for C-68.
That's correct.
Okay. But the process did play itself out, and a C-13 license was required. Do you remember when you submitted an RFP to the FY521, the underlying RFP, if I could call it that?
Okay, yes.
Do you remember how long you informed the airport you needed to transition the services if you were to be the eventual awardee?
I believe I asked for 30 days.
30 days. I'm going to ask you, sorry, we're going to have to go to the big binder, to turn to page 775. Sorry about that. I brought you into sort of the fourth of five pages, but are you able to recognize what that is, or do you want me to let you review to the first page?
I don't remember. It's been more than 2 years.
Sure. So could you go to 772 then, and just, and it's also on the screen behind you, if that works better. Do you recognize that document? I'll represent it to your council's letterhead addressed to the executive director of the airport, dated March 21, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Without telling me anything that you discussed with your council, can I just ask, did you review this?
Yes.
Okay, and now I'm going to ask you to turn back to that page 4. And there are numbered paragraphs. Do you see paragraph number 2 under mm-hmm. remedy requested?
Yes.
Okay, so you'll recall this document was dated March 21, 2023. It appears that it was served on the airport by the stamp received on the same date.
Mm-hmm.
In this document, you're asking for the airport to award JMI the contract to commence on May 15, 2023. You see that?
Yes.
Okay, so
in the underlying RFP, you represented you asked for 30 days. In this one, it looks a little bit more like 40 days, if my math is fair, a little bit more than 20. Would JMI have needed time to onboard and transition services if they were awarded a contract?
We could possibly have done it in 30 days, but I just wanted the extra time.
Okay, and that extra time was to allow you to bring on the personnel needed?
That's part of it, yes.
Okay, may I ask you, did you do radio interviews after the initial protest? After the initial dismissal of your case in February of 2022, do you recall?
No. Oh, did I do radio interviews?
Did you go on and comment that, you know, there was no fraud, for example, as was found at the OPA, you didn't agree with the decision? Is that a fair paraphrase?
I was not in any media, radio
also,
media.
Do you also have a brother?
Yes.
What's his name?
John.
John Iba.
Yes.
And he's also an officer of JMI?
He's the vice president.
Okay, are you aware that he went on to?
Yes.
Did you listen to some of his media statements?
I did.
Did you hear him at any point say that he was willing to hire personnel from Menzies if JMI was eventually awarded the contract?
Yes.
And
yes.
Is that similar to you want to bring on the appropriate personnel? If you
yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I mentioned that in my proposal.
Understood. Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that...
And that's how usually these contracts work out.
And that you would bring on the personnel. And,
yeah. Whoever would want to...
Also, softens the blow, right? If the incumbent's losing, you don't want people to lose. It's fair.
Yeah.
I understand. But what I'm trying to say is you would have needed some time, and so far we've estimated initial protests, 30, in March of this year, 40 days. That's accurate? You're confident that if there was a procurement, that would be the timeline you would need to onboard personnel to perform the services under the contract?
Yeah, depending on the time, it could be 30 days, could be 60 days. But, you know, we have enough staff to be able to operate and maintain the baggage handling system within 2 weeks.
And you recognize that the baggage conveyance operator doesn't just do, I mean, you've read the scope of services, doesn't just do electrical work.
Yes.
There's technical aspects, people sitting at computers.
Yes.
Technicians running barcodes.
Yes. We've been trained by Siemens along with the airport and Menzies people.
Understood. And so... why didn't JMI bid on the emergency or submit a proposal or respond to the RFI on the emergency procurement?
I did not know about it. I have not read any email to that effect, or I did not see any publication to that effect.
But you didn't protest that you hadn't seen any of that, correct, until March of this year?
That's correct.
And you recall in the Superior Court we litigated... that you did, in fact, you were aware of the first extension by using the newspaper advertisement you sent it to.
Yes.
So you knew that the airport was extending it beyond that initial.
That's when I found out about this emergency procurement.
Okay. And again, without revealing anything of what you discussed specifically with your counsel, could you tell the hearing officer why did JMI wait until March 21st to file a protest on the length of the procurement?
Yeah, because in March, the thing that had changed is that we got the AG's opinion and also the CLB, I think, decision.
But didn't your protest preceded the actual CLB decision, isn't that correct?
Say that again.
So your protest was filed on March 21st.
Okay.
When did the CLB make its decision?
I don't remember that. Can somebody check the record?
Do you recall whether the protest was made before the CLB made its decision or after? Can you recall that?
No, I believe, at the very best, I know that we filed a protest after getting the OAG opinion.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, if we could turn back to the protest, it should be in front of you at page 772. I mean, wouldn't that be the best indication? If there was a CLB decision, would that have been something you would have wanted included in a protest at the agency level?
It would have been good, but the way that I have seen CLB work... it's not as fast as I would like.
So is it fair to say if the protest only references the OAG opinion,
mm-hmm.
Is that something? Could it be because the COB had not made its final determination yet?
That's correct. I think it took them 2 or 3 meetings
to get into that
decision.
So the OAG publicized its opinion, or excuse me, the COB publicized the opinion from the OAG at the first meeting of several.
Right.
I don't represent you. They're in the papers, so that's why I'm not going to hold you to the dates.
Mm-hmm.
The recordings are online. Not trying to do anything, but so you were at those meetings?
Yes.
So the first
The first and the second.
Okay, so the first meeting they presented, and just confirm if you know, if you don't, it's fine, but they presented the OAG opinion.
Yes.
Then the board actually brought back for a work session to discuss the OAG opinion, how to calculate the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the COB went from the work session into regular session and issued its decision. Were you at that meeting?
I believe I was.
Okay. So what prompted your protest in March? If it's cited in here, is the OAG opinion. And it may have, as far as you can remember, it may have preceded the actual COB decision. I guess it's all
yes.
Mr. Ilao, thank you very much, and thank you for letting me call you out of order. I have no further questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
I have no questions.
No. Any other questions?
I have a little redirect. Or I guess crossing. Not used to crossing the street. I haven't done that yet in 2 decades, but we'll start today. Now, Mr. Ilao, are you familiar with a 14-day protest clock?
Yes.
Okay. And did we discuss that ad nauseum with the airport in the Superior Court matter?
Yes, and in other protest cases.
And do you think that the reason why you had to protest and not wait for the CLB is because you have a 14-day clock to protest?
That's correct.
I have a few other questions for you. I want to give the OPA hearing officer sort of a flavor of what JMI does. How long has JMI been in business?
We started business in 1978.
Okay.
As an electrical contractor and air conditioning contractor.
Okay. And the business was started by your father?
By my father. I was a junior in high school, and I helped out after school.
And how long have you been?
Well, I'd like to say I've been there from the start, because after school I would work from at least 4 o'clock to 10 p.m. every day, including Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
And then when I went to college in 1980 up to 86, I would come back home every summer and basically help out in the business.
What's the nature of JMI business?
At this point, we are a supplier first and a contractor second. We basically, to give you an idea of the products that we sell, our customers are GPA, GWA, GSA, GMH, GDOE, almost all the government of Guam agencies. So we supply from gym equipment to medical equipment, and of course, electrical equipment, water equipment, just about anything and everything except cars and insurance.
What percentage of JMI's business is the government of Guam?
Before the military build-up talks, I would say 7 years ago, I would say 85% of our business is doing and responding to GovGuam bids.
And you're saying that's changed over the last 7 years?
Yes, because of the military buildup, now we're doing more business with the contractors.
What experience do you have with emergency procurements?
I'm going to object to this point. It's beyond the scope, and I was giving leeway because I don't want to be, you know, I don't know how that's relevant. It's beyond the scope of my direct.
Okay.
How far are we going to go with it?
No, I mean, I just have a couple more questions. I just want you to know who JMI is. That's
sure,
all
sure.
I'm trying to tell you. And that's really it. Do you have experience with emergency procurement?
Over the 37 years that I've been president of the company, I have come across emergency procurement with GPA, GWA, GMH, and I believe GSA.
Similarly to this emergency procurement, or different, or?
Well, usually when protests are filed on certain procurements, the agency goes back to their drawing board and tries to find out what is wrong or what was pointed to them during the protest, and somehow reworks the bid or the RFP changes the term of the contract and also a few specifications, and then goes out again to issue the RFP or the IFB.
Do you think the contracting officer should have done that in this case?
I believe there is reason to believe that it should have been done.
Now, earlier I had
said, because of the emergency situation and the fact that we always need a baggage handling system.
Now, earlier I had said, and I just want to hear from you, when did JMI in fact install the Siemens baggage carrier system? Okay, sorry. And you were the local subcontractor for that?
Yes, we're the local contractor for Siemens. It took us close to 2 years to get it done.
And I just want to be clear, you never received an email from Guam International Airport's procurement office asking you to bid on the emergency procurement that we've been discussing today?
I don't remember seeing that, and I think I have a good memory.
I have no further questions.
Okay.
I do deserve it.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So just on the last couple points. So you said that you recognize the airport always needs a baggage conveyance system.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So shutting down the baggage conveyance system, you recognize that would be catastrophic.
Yes.
You've reviewed papers filed by your own counsel saying that perhaps that was an emergency, at least back then.
The first emergency, yes.
The first emergency? No, but I just want to. Your counsel has conceded that, at least, that maybe back in October 2021 that was an emergency.
Oh, yes.
So, you have a lot of. Your counsel asks you, you have a lot of experience in government procurement. Are you also familiar with the practice of agencies just extending contracts while protests are pending?
Yes.
And you've been on both, I assume, with the amount of business you do, you've been on both the beneficial end and the sort of upsetting end at that point.
Yes.
And is that a better practice? Is that a plausible alternative to what happened here?
It really depends on your need and your perceived need in the future. Because if you think this emergency is going to go on for 2 years or 10 years, then I think you should have gone to a new procurement.
Well, when JMI initiated its appeal on October 8th, 2023, the contract was set to expire on October 31st, 2023, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you acknowledge you need at least 60 days, or 30 to 60, I think is what you testified, to transition off. So you weren't a viable alternative for the emergency procurement at the time.
Well, I also understand that when you issue a new RFP, then you cannot just award in 30 days or 15 days.
Would JMI have protested if the airport issued an RFP and didn't require a C-13 and C-15? My
objection calls for speculation.
He opened the door with it.
I didn't open the door to have him guess at what he might do in the future if somebody else did something.
Talked about what emergency procurements his experience are and what they could have done differently. I'm just touching the same.
That's like asking him if he would go to church next Sunday. Yeah, he'd like to, but how does he know if he's going to be able to go?
Dave put forward that he has experience with emergency procurements and how he would have handled it differently.
Let's let him answer it and then have to move on.
Most likely.
If there was no C-13 specific requirement, there would have been.
Most likely. Because, you know, after all these proceedings, I mean, we'll, you know, like Nancy is requesting that we tell the airport what licenses are required, which is, of course, not in my, you know, we shouldn't be doing that. It should be the agencies telling the vendors to do that.
Understand. Thank you for answering the question. I have no further questions at this time.
Anybody else before I start?
I just have a couple questions, actually.
Okay.
So JMI installed the baggage handling system, right?
Yes.
Okay. So in the last 20 years, how many years has JMI had the baggage handling services contract with the airport?
We haven't had an O&M contract before the baggage handling system.
Do you know who's been doing it for the last 20 years?
Yes.
Okay. No further questions.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, just a few, Mr. Habibu. Let me see. You have other procurement experience, it sounds like, for many, 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 many years.
Yes, with different government of Guam agencies.
Okay. And so you said that you've seen a number of emergency procurements in your time.
Yes.
with what agency?
GPA, GMH, and GSA also.
And what would be the nature of those emergencies?
For example, if there's a certain grant, federal grant, that needed to be incurred or paid for before, like, September 30, GDOE, for example, would come up with some bridges procurement to, so that they could procure that certain item and be able to obligate the funds from the feds on that. Otherwise, they would lose it.
Any other sorts of, crises that would, in your experience, that would bring upon, bring about an emergency procurement?
Certain GPA equipment and GWA equipment.
What's the nature of the emergency?
For example, if a pump station, a GWA, needs some pump replacement, and it's not available on island, then we would go on emergency procurement.
Okay.
But those are mostly for supplies.
You ever seen any that's done, like for a typhoon?
Yes, but I guess it doesn't. Well, it does. Typhoon in 2003, when we were hit by Typhoon Papa, GPA and GWA in particular had a lot of emergency procurement requirements.
Because of the typhoon.
Yes.
And you were here, I'm sure, in, 91 when we had the earthquake? Was that 91?
Yes.
Any emergency procurements coming out of that one?
I don't remember us getting too involved in that.
Okay.
Because it was mostly problems with the power plants.
Okay. So here, what's being put forward by the airport is that the emergency is because of the way the litigation works. In other words, the emergency is because they're not able to actually procure it now. Do you agree that that's an emergency?
I believe they could have issued another RFP, make it every 3 months, renewable every 3 months, every month.
My question is, do you think that's an emergency? The RFP is a tool, right?
Not for 2 years.
Okay. At the onset, though.
At the onset, I agree. Totally.
You agree it's an emergency?
Yes, the first 3 months. Totally agree.
If you had received the solicitation for the emergency procurement back in October of 2021, would you have bid?
Yes.
So the way I understand this solicitation and what's needed is really just a crew to come in there to know what they're doing and manage this thing for a while, right?
With the proper license.
With the proper license, but, I mean, the actual part of it that is sort of the grind, right, the day-to-day grind is sort of just to make sure there's enough people, that the bags are flowing, right? That kind of thing?
Yes, we've all been provided training by Siemens.
So you've been trained by, your folks have been trained by Siemens?
Yes.
And is there anything unique about the Guam baggage handling system that you know of that sort of makes it super special and one of a kind?
Yeah, well, the one thing that's unique is the handling the operations, because it involves software, a good understanding of the software that is being used, and, you know, the fixes that you need to do on the computer, somebody needs to really know what they're doing to be able to operate the system.
Okay.
But the maintenance issues are just common electric motors, drives, you know, basically electrical and electronic stuff.
I guess my question is more along the lines of, is there something in the baggage handling system that was in the specifications especially that shows, that you remember, that shows that, hey, this is different than any other airport? So as far as you know from the training in Siemens, your skill and everything, this seems to be a pretty fungible procurement.
Yes.
Any, besides the licensing, any specialized degrees or anything like that that are necessary for this type of procurement?
No, just basically training from Siemens. That is very important.
Because you're the business head, I get to ask some more questions. How long is do you think the usable life for this thing is?
Depending on the maintenance, a lot of it could last 10, 15 years. Of course, you need to replace a lot of mechanical parts in the process of the maintenance. So if you maintain it properly and install the right parts and don't shortcut any fixes, then it should last quite a while.
Right, 10 or 15 years, like you said. Okay. When did you guys install this?
I think 2015 to 20. I think 2015 to 2017.
So by your estimation, it's in the middle of its useful life.
Yes, and like I think the airport had testified, it needs some upgrades right now.
What would be the difference between a C-13 and a C-15?
A C-15 is an electronics license, I believe. And C-13 is electrical. So electronic systems are related to communications, controls, and some communication installations.
And C-13 is more just like the big box of electrical stuff that's going on?
Electrical wiring.
We're lawyers, right? So we don't really...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think I have any other questions if anybody else has any follow-ups.
Just what specific C-68 license you were alleging?
I believe it's telecommunications. Because the system had some fiber optics communication systems.
Thank you. That's all.
I've got a question, actually. With respect to the RFP, the maintenance, the baggage handling system operations work,
yes.
Would that require you need to make permanent changes to the structure of the airport?
No.
So you wouldn't have to tear down any walls?
No.
You wouldn't have to build up any new walls at the airport?
No.
Would it involve any construction work at all?
No.
Okay. No questions.
When the hearing officer asked you about specialized degrees, you said, no, not really, but it would require an RME, is that correct?
Yes, it would need an RME to get the contractor's license, and it also, I think the specifications also required the services of a master electrician.
Yeah, and that's because, and I don't know if it's in the record, but the voltage... How high is the voltage that runs the system, if you can recall?
Yeah, the motors are at 480 volts. A lot of the electric motors and the drives.
And the reason that you thought the C-15 license was required is because of the... When you say communications, you don't necessarily mean telephones. You mean the communication controls that's operating and communicating with the software. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
Partially, and also the variable speed drives that control the motors are basically electronic systems. The battery, the UPS system is an electronic system. The electronics control the DC voltage that comes out of the UPS system.
And then when the controls and the motors have to be repaired, you need to take all that stuff out and implement new parts, I guess.
Yeah, depending on the trouble, yeah. It could be the motor or the drive system.
I have no further questions.
I won't have anything else. Anybody else? No?
Okay, just a good one. So the motors and the drive systems, are these things that would need to be constructed or built by the company that's operating the system, or would they buy these in the market?
They would buy these as an assembly, and they would just replace the motor as it gets broken.
Because they wear out, basically.
Yeah, or burnt or whatever due to power fluctuation, whatever.
So these are basically finished products that are bought off the shelf and used to replace.
Yes, and you just install a new motor to replace the old motor.
So your counsel asked if there was a master electrician requirement in the emergency procurement scope.
Not in the emergency, in the original procurement.
Okay.
Well, I have not seen the emergency procurement documents.
Okay.
Anything else? We can let Mr. Umar
off the stand. Thank you. Thank you. So we'll call Mr. Finn on yet, since he's still under subpoena. And it's him, and then we have our air terminal manager at our plant, just as we finish. He's downstairs.
Yeah. I already said to send him up.
Wow, so we might be able to finish with all testimony today.
We're trying.
What do you think so, yeah.
And maybe just a quick summation tomorrow? Or are you guys prepared to do summation today?
Do it tomorrow, but do you really want summation, or do you just want findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing the possible, I'm okay with just that. But
we're still on the record?
Yes.
Okay. We're still on the record.
Do we want to be on or off?
It doesn't matter,
right?
It's up to you guys. You guys are managing the flow.
I'm fine either way.
How about can we reassess that after our next, or whatever, our last break after
sure.
Mr. Johnson's witnesses or whatever he calls.
Yeah, just because we're all busy, right?
Yeah.
So we can wrap it up, Gary.
I got to go cut another tree to fell.
Just cut them all down.
I know, pave it all.
Then the last thing, cut them all down.
Nobody goes outside.
We lost like every single tree in Mama.
Yeah. Could I just run through this quickly and
sure.
Inform my witnesses?
Sure, let's go off the record.
We're off the record at 2:57 p.m.
Yes.
We're back on the record at 3:02 p.m.
Okay, the Air Force is going to call this next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. We call Mr. Fenelia from the Boeing Contractors License Board.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony which you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. Good afternoon, Mr. Fenelia.
Hi.
So, sir, I'll just represent that we are classmates the same year, and so I am aware of you, but I wanted to ask, have you ever testified in a formal proceeding, like a court hearing before?
No, I'm actually really nervous right now.
Yes, and you're not unusual in that regard. So let me just say, just some ground rules when you answer, if you could just speak, because the mic is recording in front of you.
Okay.
And if there are any questions you didn't hear or you don't understand, sir, please just let me know.
Okay. Yes.
So where do you currently work? I see we're in a uniform.
Contractor's License Board.
What is your position?
I'm an investigator.
And how long have you been in that role? Did you see all
Coming up on 3 years now.
And so is that about 2020?
Yes. November, I believe. November 2020 is when I started.
And were you working at the CLB before then?
No.
I want to ask you about a specific case, and I'm going to say the case number and see if that jogs your memory. Memory, it's 2021-09-04. Are you familiar with that case?
It sounds familiar. I just need that last portion of the case to remember.
Sure.
So
let me ask you, I'll direct you to an exhibit, and we'll
okay.
See if you recognize the document, and that might help.
Okay.
If you could turn to Exhibit I in the smaller binder that's open in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Exhibit I.
And it should be tabbed on the top. So, have you seen this document before?
Yes, sir.
And I'll represent, because it's already been justified too, that this is an OAG opinion directed to the director of the COB, your boss,
yes,
related to that case number I mentioned, 2021-0904. Having looked at this document, are you now familiar with the case I'm referring to?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's been testified to that you were the investigator that handled this case.
Correct.
This case was initiated at the latter part of October 2021, is that correct? Or September or October?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And in your role related to this case, did you review a scope of services that, related to work being done at Guam International Airport Authority?
Only through the complaint that came in.
So it's actually, I'm going to direct you on Exhibit I to page 785 at the bottom. It'll be page 8 of the document itself.
Okay.
And so this is from the AG's opinion, which you said you were familiar with, correct?
Correct.
And they, it appears they took out portions from internal report of the Contractor's License Board. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding the question.
Sure. So do you recognize the excerpted page they put on their opinion?
Can I just check it real quick?
Absolutely, with the red triangles. And it's also on the screen behind you if that's easier for you to see.
That is correct.
Okay. So are you aware of whether they took this from reviewing a report that you or your colleagues in the investigation division prepared?
I cannot answer that.
Let me ask it a different way. So did you, in fact, review, you said it came with the complaint, the scope of services, it's noted there, RFP number, RFP 005 FY 21.
Yes.
Okay. Did you review a scope of services related to an emergency procurement issued by the airport, separate document from this document?
Not that I am aware of.
Okay. So the findings that the CLB eventually issued in March of this year were based on the review of the underlying RFP, RFP 005 FY21.
Okay.
Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay, I mean, you were the investigator, so you would know if there was another scope included in the investigation?
I believe we just went off of the original complaint that came in. As far as that emergency, I think that came later.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit then about the original complaint, just so we have the right frame of reference.
Okay.
So, on the original complaint, you have the complaint with the RFP 005 FY2021, correct?
Okay. Correct.
Correct. Okay, and then you also have, according to testimony earlier, just want to clarify, make sure we understand, you had a notice to appear issue.
Yes.
And then there was a meeting.
Yes.
With Menzies.
Correct, yes.
Then GCLB also conducted a site visit.
Yes.
Okay. Those four things formed what eventually became your report to the board? Was there any other parts of your investigation that I didn't mention?
Not that I can think of it right now.
Okay, so here at the Office of the Attorney General, you've read the opinion, correct?
Yes.
They reference in part the site visit?
Yes.
But also in part the actual pages from the RFP where they have these little red boxes.
Okay.
Is that consistent with your findings, that you found the license was required based on these pages plus the site visit?
Yes.
Okay, and how much of each influence or helped you reach your conclusion in your investigation?
We did have to analyze the scope of work with my supervisor and our investigation team. That's based off of the scope of work and then the definitions that our office gives as far as licensing. That's how we determine it would be required.
So I want to be very clear about that. So based on the scope of work plus definitions, you were able to determine a citation should issue?
Yes.
And so the site visit confirmed what you had already found in your mind?
Yes.
Okay. Are you aware of what work Menzies does at the airport that requires a C-13 license?
Well, as far as the baggage handling system, because there's electric motors, the voltage is a little bit higher than the average residential home voltage, so a little bit more special requirements, I would say.
So only when Menzies does work related to that voltage, is that the finding that C-13 is required? That's what I'm trying to...
It's a culmination of it, I guess.
So when Menzies technicians sit at a computer and operate the baggage conveyor system from the control panel, that requires a C-13 license?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so did the COB ever engage in that type of analysis? What portions are specifically require C-13 license and which don't?
I believe we identified what would be required. And, of course, you sit down in front of the desk to monitor the baggage system, but in the event that the system has a malfunction or maintenance required, that's probably the time you need that license to perform the work.
How many times did that happen during your site visit?
While we were there, we actually witnessed work ongoing. We didn't stop them to ask them what they're doing because we weren't there to stop work or anything. We were there to observe, do our investigation.
And were you able to calculate a percentage or portion based on your looking at the scope of services and your site visit of what actually requires C-13 work or license and what work Menzies says that doesn't?
We did not. Once we found out, you know, these are some of the scope of work is already required, I don't understand why we would have to find out every single job that they do.
Did you attend the board meeting where the board discussed your findings, the OAG opinion, and eventually issued a citation?
Yes.
Didn't the board have similar questions about whether Menzies performed other work under the scope of services that did not require a C-13 license?
Not that I can recall, but I know right before that board meeting happened, we got the opinion from the Office of the Attorney General, and that opinion supported our report.
Okay, so let's take it from there. You've conceded today you've not conducted that same level of analysis on the emergency procurement scope of services, correct?
Yes.
Would that be required before you could determine whether that scope of services requires a C-13 license?
If they're performing the same work, then it would.
Are you aware of whether the RFP 521 and the emergency procurement solicitation had the same scope of services?
Me personally, no.
And so the findings that you made were based on the RFP 521 scope of services, just to be clear.
Yes.
And based on your review of that, plus definitions, you were able to confirm by a site visit that certain work did require a license.
Correct.
But you didn't. I think your testimony is once you found that a license is required, you didn't need to go further to determine what part of the scope required a license and which didn't.
Correct.
But you concede that during the site visit, there were portions you observed that did not require a C-13 license. Work that Menzies employees were doing.
I don't even know how to answer it. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Fanoni. I appreciate you hanging out on this opinion. No further questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Fanoni. When you were at the site visit, did you see people walking around?
Yes.
Does walking around require a contractor's license?
No.
What about talking to each other? Did you see people talking to each other during the scope of work?
Yes.
Does talking to each other require a contractor's license?
No.
Okay, but you did see activity that requires a contractor's license. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
All right. You're familiar with team sports. I want to know who's on the investigative team at the CLB. If we spoke to Ms. Bailey earlier, I know you're part of it. Who else is on that team?
We have Investigator Aaron Aragon, Investigator Andrew Mesa, I myself, and Ms. Nita Bailey is our supervisor. And that would make us our team.
Yeah, I guess it's Ms. Bailey. I know sports analogies are a little weak, but I'm full disclosure, I think I remember you from another life of football.
Yes, sir.
Is Ms. Bailey the captain of your team?
Yes.
Okay, so her conclusions are the conclusions of your team, is that
that's
fair to say?
Yes.
And then I'm curious just generally, I understand that Menzies has got an ongoing appeal. Are you involved in that at all, in any capacity?
Yes.
How are you involved?
So I'm the investigator for the case. Currently, we are in that appeal process. I believe we are pending a hearing officer for the hearing.
Okay. And you playing a role in that process?
I guess if I may be a witness again, possibly.
Got nothing further, Mr. Fanoni.
Okay.
Thanks for
testifying.
Mr. Jones?
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Fanoni.
Good afternoon.
I want to talk about a C-13 license.
Okay.
So there's not just C-13, and there's C-1, 2, 3,
Yes.
And these all are a certain type of license at the CLB, right?
Yes.
And that would be a specialty contractor license?
I can't really comment on what exactly that specialty contractor license means, because I'm sure you're aware we're doing our adjudicating our rules and regs.
For the C-68, right?
Correct. So okay. There's language that has been adjusted, and right now I can't.
But for the current rules that are in place?
Specialty, yes.
Okay, so a specialty contractor license.
I believe so.
Do you know what a specialty contractor is?
I'd have to look up that definition.
I've got the definition here, actually.
Okay.
Let me
sure.
Tell me if you think this is correct or wrong or sounds right.
Okay.
Under 21 GCA 70106, a specialty contractor is a contractor whose operations as such are the performance of construction work requiring special skill and whose principal contracting business involves the use of specialized building trades or crafts. So the work that was being done at the airport by Menzies, was that construction work?
No, I wouldn't call it construction work, no.
Okay. When you were doing your investigation, I want to just get an understanding whether you took into account certain exceptions to the contractor's law. Are you aware about a section covering exceptions to the contractor's law?
Yes.
And that would be 21 GCA 70101, correct?
That sounds correct.
Are you familiar with exception C under that section?
I'd have to look back and see what it is.
I've got it written out here too, though. You don't mind me reading it to you now?
No, go ahead.
That section, again, 21 GCA 70101C, states that a person who sells or installs any finished products, materials, or articles of merchandise which are not actually fabricated into and do not become a permanent fixed part of the structure or to the construction, alteration, improvement, or repair of personal property. And before there it says, this chapter shall not apply to this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So did you consider this exception when you were conducting your investigation into Menzies' activity at the airport?
I mean, we always consider the exemptions. Just the thing is I didn't see that as an exemption.
Sure.
When we did our investigation. Looked like repair work to me.
Okay. And the repair work, did it involve replacing motors and things like that?
Yes.
Okay. Did those look like they were becoming a permanent and fixed part of the airport?
I mean, it's connected.
But they could be replaced, right?
That's true.
Okay, so would that indicate to you the fact that they could be replaced, that they're not permanent parts of the airport, the structure?
I don't even know how to answer that question.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I think when Mr. Walsh asked you, I think you confirmed that you're involved in the, the appeal that's pending over at the CLB with respect to the citation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Again, has a hearing been scheduled for that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Do you know if a hearing officer has been assigned to it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So is there still a pending appeal at the CLB?
Yes.
Okay. So is there been a final decision issued by the CLB following the hearing?
Not yet.
Okay. If I could talk about the notice to appear.
Mm-hmm.
Were you present for the meeting for the notice to appear?
Yes.
Do you know who else was present for that meeting?
I believe my director was at the time, was Mr. Orsini, and the NZ staff.
Was I present for that meeting?
I think the first one, no.
There were two meetings?
Yes.
When was the first meeting?
When we sat with Mr. Payet, I believe.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't recall if you were there. I know I did sit with you in one of these meetings, but I believe there were two. I'd have to go back to my records to check.
Would it be possible for us to play Exhibit C? Just to see if I could be sure. If we played a recording of that meeting, would it help with your recollection?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's do it. I think we only have to play the beginning part at least.
I am.
Sorry, can I?
Stage three is?
The one that Mr. Filani described was the first one that was Payet, or the second one you described?
I'm not sure. We can ask you after we play it, though, if that will.
Is November 16, 2021. The time is 9 a.m. The meeting is for case number 2021-09-04, Ed Ela versus AC, one of Menzies. People at the meeting is in the meeting is Mr. Rodney Payet, Ms. Mildred Sikawa, and Mr.
Mars Johnson.
Mars Johnson. And the investigators here are Andrew Mesa and Marcus Pinocchio. Okay, so officially recording.
We can stop again. Do you recall that meeting?
Yes. Okay. I believe this is our second meeting.
That was the second meeting. Yes. Okay. Was Mr. Rossini present for the second meeting?
Not. Well, not that I didn't hear.
Okay. Was he present for the first meeting?
Yes.
He was present for the first meeting?
Yes.
Who else was present at that first meeting?
From CLB, just me and Director.
And from Menzies?
And I know Mr. Rodney was there, and he had two other staff with him.
Okay. Yeah. And what was discussed at that first meeting?
So he was concerned, what is this complaint about? And we explained that was the complaint. Mr. Ilao came in saying that Menzies was awarded a bid and they were unlicensed to perform the scope of work.
Anything else?
God, it's been so long ago. I'd have to go back to my notes to just brush up on what that specific meeting was about.
Okay. Are all these meetings recorded, these notes to appears?
They usually are.
Okay, so there would be a recording back in the CLB then?
Not always, though, okay. But yeah, typically we try to, sometimes we have technical difficulties or equipment failure.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay, real quick. The purpose for the licenses are to make sure what exactly? Licenses in general, at the contractor's license anymore. Like, what's the purpose of having those?
Oh, so that you can conduct contractual work and receive money legally.
Well, I guess my question is, sometimes that somebody with a license has to sign off on something saying it's done, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So for the C-13 work that's done at the airport, is there going to be a C-13 sign-off on anything?
That would be however Menzies conducts their business.
Okay, but from the licensing aspect, from the regulatory standpoint, is there anything that the C-13 is going to do that requires, you know, a sign-off from the regulatory standpoint?
Not that I know of. I mean, so, like, I'm sorry, I'm not really understanding the...
No, it's like this work got done, and you guys, I assume, have enforcement responsibilities as well?
We enforce...
Or just licensing?
Yeah, just licensing, okay. Really.
So does any of the stuff, the C-13, to the extent that you know, the C-13, does any of that require, if you know, that DPW is going to want to look at a C-13 sign-off?
No. But I do believe they require a certification from a master electrician. I think that's what you're trying to ask.
Okay.
So, Emmy would...
I'm just trying to figure out exactly, like, how important it is to have this thing, because if I go and plug in an aircon in my house, you know, well, it's Guam, we don't know, like, what we're going to end up with, but, you know, we're not always checking for... So let me ask that. If somebody installs an aircon in my house, do they need a contractor's license?
I believe they do. because in order to install an AC, you got to get refrigerant, and without, you got to get a license for that refrigerant to get refrigerant. So there are barriers that stop you from performing certain works. That if we're not checking if you have a license or not. You need a license to go and get refrigerant, and we don't offer that license. That's actually at EPA, but it's a prerequisite for our license.
So, I mean, I guess I recognize why, you know, where my lapse in my understanding is, but just to make sure I'm clear on this, the fact that you have a C-13 is just that you can do the work. It's not that you're going to sign off, certify, or do anything like that?
It would be the master electrician that does that certification, and then... I would say that, I guess, the reason that you would need the C-13 for this specific case was another company who is licensed already is claiming that this company is performing works without.
Well, hopefully it's not being regulated by the company, right?
Yeah.
It's being regulated by you guys.
Correct. Yeah.
Let me see if I'm done real quick. Okay,
hold on.
Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Fanoni. I just want to confirm, are you aware of whether Menzies employs a master electrician, certified master electrician?
Yes, I'm aware.
They do?
Yes, he is. But it's hard to say that he's an ME under employment, because an ME is like their own professional, and their role would be to certify. So if you're working under Menzies, you can't wear an ME hat. You're an employee for Menzies.
But just in response to the hearing officer's question, that individual would have the authority to certify or sign off on things, master electrician. Maybe not for Menzies, but...
Right, yeah. So you know what I'm saying, right?
But I'm just confirming that...
yeah, he was an employee.
There was a master electrician there.
Correct.
Anything else, Mr. Brennan?
Oh, sorry.
It's a minimal follow-up to your question.
Yes, sure.
You mentioned pay. I want to make sure the hearing officer understands that. It isn't one of the critical aspects of the contractor work is holding yourself out as a contractor and getting paid to do the work.
Yes.
And what does the existence of a license from the contractor's licensing board show to the public about the person who does that?
That he is licensed to do that scope of work.
And what does the license mean? What's the public supposed to take by seeing a licensed person? You know, like I see a licensed lawyer. What does that mean?
He's professional and he's... regulated.
Just not my cousin putting in my aircon.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially if I'm trying to get paid.
Yes.
This distinction between somebody being a master electrician and an RME.
Mm-hmm.
Does being a contractor who's licensed require you to have an RME?
Yes.
Okay. And the difference between being the RME and a master electrician is. The master electrician is an outside guy who can certify the job. Is that right?
That's correct.
But the RME is the in-house guy who's working for that contract.
Correct. So RME performs the work, ME certifies.
So if the hearing officer went to Home Depot and bought a window unit to put into his man cave, there's nothing wrong with him doing that, installing his own AC in his own home, right?
I don't believe so.
If I, however, told the hearing officer... Hey, for $100, I will air condition your man cave. Might that require or implicate licensing from the COB?
Yes.
Thank you.
No other questions.
Okay. All right, Mr. Fennel. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
First time.
Yeah.
All done. Still nervous. We have our next witness already on the way from my office.
Let's go off the record.
We're off the record at 3:29 p.m. We're back on the record at 3:32 p.m.
All right. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. The airport will call its final witness, Mr. Juan Regis.
Juan Regis.
Do you solemnly swear affirm that the testimony that you're about to give would be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
afternoon, Mr. Reyes.
Good afternoon.
May I ask, have you ever testified in a formal proceeding or trial setting before?
Just depositions.
Okay, so you're familiar that, you know, audible answers into the mic?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is recording in front of you.
Okay.
If you don't understand or you need to repeat a question, please just let me know. I just want to first learn a little bit about you. What is your position at the airport?
I'm the airport manager for the Guam National Airport.
Okay, and how long have you had that position?
I've been at the airport for 15 years, but held the position for 2.
Okay, and do you have any other career experience in the airport industry?
Yes, I've got a total of over 40 years of aviation experience, multiple with military, civil, and federal.
Okay, does that federal experience include work for the FAA?
That's correct.
In what capacity?
I was airport certification inspector for 8 years.
And in that capacity, did you have access and did you purview over operations in any specific region?
Yes, primarily with the Pacific region. Entails 26 airports.
And could you just give the hearing officer an idea of what specific airports that you may be familiar with in that region?
So pretty much the state of Hawaii. We have total 7 Part 139 airports, 3 in America, Samoa, Midway, 3 or 4 in FSM, 1 in Madru, 3 in CMI, Guam, and Palau.
And when you say Part 139 regulations, you're talking about CFR, from the Code of Federal Regulations in the FAA title, correct?
That's correct, 14 CFR.
Okay, and so in that capacity and all the airports you just listed, did you become, you know, familiar with the different operations of the airports in the region, I guess the industry region, we'll call it?
That's correct. Minimum of 2 trips per airport per year within a 8-year span.
And were you, for example, were you inspecting equipment and operations-related personnel in regards to the facility?
Primarily, FAA compliance entails working with the airport itself primarily, runway compliance, wildlife, notice to airmen, pavement marking, surface conditions, safety areas, aircraft usable surfaces, lighting obstructions, and it just goes on and on.
Well, let me just ask, how about baggage conveyance systems?
Baggage conveyance systems are not necessarily Part 139, although there could be some hamperage with regard to Part 139 with aircraft operations.
So outside of that 139 scope, though, you are familiar with baggage operation systems specifically in this region?
Yes, to some extent, yes.
So of all the systems, where would you rate if, you know, one is the most complex system and the bottom is people carrying bags from the cart to the belly of the plane, where would Guam fall in terms of complexity?
I would say Guam would fall primarily right under Honolulu Airport.
And is that right at the top?
Honolulu being the number one airport, yes, correct. So we're actually almost, I would equate us to, I would say, Maui Airport, Kahului.
And is that just in terms of size or also complexity?
Size and complexity.
Are you aware in your role as the ATM, let me just step back for a second, you supervise all operations of the airport?
Yes, correct. I oversee the entire day-to-day airport operations.
And you interact, for example, with outsourced service providers at the airport that the airport engages to conduct certain business?
Yes, that's correct. From grass cutting to baggage conveyance to jetways.
And so you're familiar with the airport's baggage conveyance system?
Yes, correct.
Would you be able to briefly describe the components of the system for the hearing officer so he can understand what we mean when we say baggage conveyance system?
Okay, so not necessarily each component itself. I'm not a subject matter expert with regard to specific equipment as it relates to the baggage conveyance. But the overall operations, I can, again, share my experience with that and how it operates. So primarily us as passengers coming to the airport for a departing flight, obviously we're going to reach up to or at least approach our assigned ticket counters where we'll check in. Upon checking in, they'll obviously ask us for any check-in bag, and of course I'll say, yes, I got 2 bags. In turn, they'll take the 2 bags, ask me if I packed it myself. I say yes, and they start to process my boarding pass. And then at that point, now the conveyance system comes into play. So now the bags are now introduced into the ticket counter conveyance system, which now goes into the outbound baggage security area onto a straight belt that goes straight into 4 different TSA scanning machines for prohibited items. So once it clears prohibited items, it moves on to another set of conveyance belts, which is now the sorter. So once it's sorted out to different airlines, it goes to their assigned peers, and then the ground handlers will take it from there to the aircraft.
And did you just describe the outbound and inbound components?
That's primarily just the outbound.
Okay. Could you also describe the inbound components?
The inbound is pretty similar, although a lot easier, from the aircraft to a straight belt and right into the carousels. So there is no sorting, there is no screening. So there's a lot more tedious processes for the outbound baggages versus the inbound.
But in terms of the inbounds, so you've, I think the best description is you really dumbed it down for us in terms, so we appreciate that. But when you're talking about carousels, that's an industry name, but that's really the right before the customs area?
Yes, in the customs hall. So it's introduced from plane side out over to the baggage tunnel. Baggage tunnel onto a straight belt. Straight belt onto the conveyance system that leads you directly down to a carousel to where it's assigned to particular aircraft. So we have multiple aircraft. They have assigned, we have a total of 5 carousels. So we could have different airlines assigned to a certain carousel.
And I mean, to be clear, this is not a simple system that, you know, the operations just turns on the switch when there's a plane and turns it off when there isn't a plane.
Oh, no, there's more to it. There's more detailed, specific, complex operations to how I just kind of described it more of a, in a nutshell, but there are a lot of moving parts to what it takes.
So I'm going to ask you a two-part question. The first part of it is, how critical are baggage conveyance systems, however that is accomplished at an airport, to an airport operation?
My experience, and again, real world, having dealt with other airports, primarily Honolulu Airport being a large hub airport, in addition to like Maui being a medium hub airport, Lahui, Kauai, Samoa, again, the complexity really is about, it could be affected in a way that flight operations can be hampered, if not actually shut down in its entirety, because of potential delays. So take, for example, and I'll use Honolulu flight, for example, since we're all kind of familiar with that. And I'm certain everyone in here has ridden on the Honolulu flight. So in the morning, that debris takes off at 7 in the morning. So, again, customers are advised to be in by at least 2 hours prior. And for that very reason, so that they could be in the process of checking in their bags and getting things moving. So with that said, we're looking at 300-plus passengers on that single flight. Just take, again, into account minimum of 2 bags per passenger. That's 600 bags that has to move through within an hour in order to make the flight.
And that moves from the check-in point to the TSA screening, for example?
To the aircraft.
Okay, but
in an hour.
In the components between the check-in counter and the aircraft, you mentioned there was the prohibited items area.
Yes.
And then TSA screening.
Yes.
Okay, and that's, when you describe those aren't manual processes where there's people taking it off one belt and putting it onto another. The system is mostly automated, correct?
Yes, it's automated.
And that's using a variety of scanners and bridges, correct, to move it from different conveyor belts, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. In your tenure, in your 2 years at the Guam International Airport, have you learned how important the Guam baggage conveyance systems are to the airport?
Yes, absolutely. And even before my time, my past life with the airport, I kind of knew the importance of how that could affect operations in its entirety.
Okay. And so, is there any other system in Guam like the baggage conveyance system?
To my knowledge, no. The only other one I could almost probably, and there probably is really no comparison, would be Anderson Air Force Base Terminal Ops, which is merely a simple straight belt from probably here to that door.
And that's the closest thing in Guam?
Yeah, the closest thing to Guam.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, normal in the industry to outsource management or handling of the baggage conveyance system?
My experience with the airports I was assigned, in addition to collateral airports in the mainland, majority of them are contracted out.
Okay, are you aware of any in the region that handle baggage conveyance systems in-house?
Not to my knowledge, no.
And so, curiosity, in your experience inspecting, are you aware of any other airport in the region that has a contractor regulatory entity involved in baggage conveyance systems?
No, other than the requirement of TSA for the screening. Throughout the sections of the conveyance systems that's required by 1582 or 1542.
Okay, well, let's go specifically now to kind of the impact. So you mentioned that it's about 600 bags in 1 hour. The system can accommodate that for the Hawaii flight.
Through automation, correct.
And that's daily?
Yes, pretty much daily.
And is that the largest flight that the airport handles?
Today, yes.
Okay, and so what would happen if you could just quantify, if the systems went down, what would that 1 hour turn into if GIA had to take other measures to move baggage to the required points along the system?
Okay, that's actually a multiple question that you're asking me. So at any point, we can lose, for example, portions of the system. Say, for example, we can lose, coming from the ticket counter that's operational, and now we're introducing it into the backside in the restricted area onto the straight belt. So if we're alluding to the straight belt being down, now there's a problem there. Now we got to manually carry 300 bags on that straight belt after being introduced from the ticket counter to the TSA scanning machines. at which point now TSA will scan it and then dump it back onto a working belt that goes to this order. So if we were to lose multiple systems throughout the system itself, straight belts, the sorter, the TSA scanning machines, the default piers, the piers itself, then we would pretty much be looking at 300 baggages an hour, which we normally through a normal automated operation would now almost take 4 to 5 hours.
And what if all of the system and not just some components or parts shut down? What would happen?
It would allude to, again, I mean, we're just talking one bite. So to give you the grander picture of all this, our afternoon bank, which is just now, or just happened just about an hour ago, 6 departures. We're looking at 6 aircraft. We're looking at 200 passengers apiece. So you're looking at, say, 6 airlines, 200 passengers with 2 baggages each. We're looking at almost 2,400 bags to be processed. So with an inoperable baggage conveyance system, we're looking at probably 6 to 8 hours, if not longer.
And it was that you could handle that 6 to 8 hours indefinitely? That would just be how long it takes?
No, it could even go further. So now it extends itself to even a larger problem. So now that we have a ground delay of 6 to 10 hours because of the conveyance systems, we have now the scheduled arrival flights that were due to come in that are now, their gates, assigned gates, are being occupied by those aircraft that are now taking a delay on the ground.
So I just want to be clear. The airport, what you're saying, though, could absorb a temporary shutdown of the system?
Manually, yes. We can do it manually throughout the whole entire deal. However, again, a good example would be Mopar. We did it for the first 2 days for Mawar, and again, it hampered operations to the point where we almost had to shut down.
And it would hamper operations because do you have personnel standing by to just carry out these manual processes?
We have a provision in place with our current contractor right now to actually augment that if we had to. But again, the circumstances with Mawar, it was almost at a point of all hands on deck, regardless who you were.
And that was more than the operations division.
Yeah, correct.
You were diverting personnel from other divisions.
Correct.
From other core functions of the airport.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's talk specifically. Do you recall earlier this year it's been testified to that there was a CLB action taken related to the airport's current provider?
CLB action as in?
Contractor's License Board action taken related to the current provider. Do you recall that?
Through the media, yes.
And were you part of a meeting discussing the options for the airport, what would happen if that provider stopped work at the airport?
Yes, I was in a meeting, yes.
Okay, and what was your role in the meeting if their operations were
My role was primarily to focus on what impacts it would have on the airport operations as a whole.
And what impact would that be if the current provider earlier this year would have stopped work?
It would be just exactly how I just spelled it out earlier with my other examples.
So temporarily the airport could handle it?
Well, to the extent of the actual normal operating processes, but as far as troubleshooting and maintaining and controlling the master boards and all that, we don't have that capability.
So the airport could do the manual part of the system but could not troubleshoot?
That's correct.
Could not service?
That's correct.
Could not repair?
That's correct.
Any of that work with your in-house capacity?
No, none of that. And more importantly, for the master control system itself. And that master control system consists of being able to detect failures throughout the system in itself. So we don't have anyone, you know, to be able to operate that either.
Apart from the importance of the baggage conveyance systems to the airport itself, how important is it, in your experience, for goods to move freely through the airport using these systems?
For goods to move freely as in?
So, I mean, what type of things move on the conveyance systems?
Oh, we have stuff that can go as you do from personal items on a regular bag, in your regular baggage packing. But more importantly, we're looking at like medication. We're looking at other stuff. Of course, we have an abundance of military movement throughout the airport itself. They're carrying, you know, all their cargo and equipment, you know, to be deployed out to these other foreign countries, again, for strategic reasons. But more importantly, we also have stuff that are going to support the outer islands themselves. So we say that at the island hopper, for example, we have stuff coming through Guam. By way of medication and other health products that need to get out to the islands.
So an interruption to the inbound and outbound system would also affect transit passengers?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And the lifeline that island hoppers serve for transit hoppers?
Yes, correct.
And shutting down would obviously be catastrophic for all of them.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Reeves. I have no further questions for you.
Okay. About
Mr. Regis, my name is Joseph Rosano, and I represent JMI. Now, it sounds like you've had a lot of experience with these airports, and I accept that. And I think you said 8 years you spent with the FAA?
Correct, sir.
Okay. And what you just described seems intricate and a challenge for the airport. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And before the protest, the original protest that required this emergency, are you familiar with that?
I'm not too familiar with the emergency or with the protests in itself. Again, I'm primarily focused on the overall operation of the equipment and not so much into the administrative portion of contracting officers and things of that effect. I'm more of the boots on the ground overseeing the overarching operations.
And so as part of your job, boots on the ground operations, I mean, you're always thinking of what could be the problems in the future and how to mitigate those problems, correct?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
So the baggage conveyor system going down is something that you thought about before all of this, and there's some sort of plan of action. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because it's foreseeable that the portions of the contractor or the conveyance, the bag system could go down, as you explained. So, and then you could have these multiple failures, you could have singular failures, and as, of course, as part of operations, you have a plan. Whether that's on your own or with your vendor to mitigate those problems. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And all the other things you described that you're doing on a daily basis, you have action plans if those things go wrong and if there are multiple failures. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Because all of these problems, as you understand, are foreseeable in the future, and that you have to have an action plan to make those things either be mitigated or stop altogether. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
No questions.
So, Mr. Regis, I thought I was going to blend the airport every time my bags are late, but you're telling me I've got to...
There's a process, right, sir?
Where do you guys keep the gnomes? It's quite an experience. I think the airport's very lucky to have you. So it's great that you're able to testify today. just going off of what Airport Council had asked, so you're telling me that no other baggage handling system requires, in your experience, is requiring a contractor's license?
Not to my understanding, no.
But that could go both ways. It's because maybe they had one, they didn't need to, or is it like, no, you don't really need one?
Yeah, so actually, I could probably answer it to some extent. Again, this is my outside observation. I'll use the state of Hawaii, Honolulu Airport, because Honolulu Airport itself, they have what's called the Hawaii Administrative Rule, and some of you probably are aware of that. And again, that Hawaii Administrative Rule is a state rule that is applicable to the airports throughout the state of Hawaii. So say, for example, their electricians or even their firefighters. Their firefighters at the very minimum, have to meet the requirements of the FAA. But outside of the FAA's requirements, they have a higher level of certification they got to achieve by way of the direction of the state as an administrative rule. So it's really, again, up to the state, the territory, what other types of requirements are set on individuals or an entity.
Okay. I mean, FAA is huge. You've seen other airports, right, outside of the region?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Even throughout the mainland.
Okay, so then we asked you in the regional scale, Guam was right under Hawaii, but how about in sort of like the, compared to, I mean, I kind of know the answer because we've been to some big airports, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but let's just compare it to, say, Narita.
Oh, Narita, we would probably be half of, not even half of how their conveyance system is actually laid out.
So, still pretty rudimentary.
Yes.
Guam.
Yeah.
Right, and it really just depends on the volume.
Correct.
Of traffic and
correct.
That kind of thing. How long have you been with Guam?
Well, my past life was 12 years with the airport before I left the FAA, and currently three years now. So it's actually going on three. So I'm looking at maybe almost 15 Guam-wide.
15 Guam-wide?
Yes, correct.
Have you ever been involved in any other procurements?
No, this is strictly with Guam.
Did you ever have a discussion with Ms. Mariola or other folks at the airport about, what are we going to do if we can't get this bid done?
That's been brought up several times, not necessarily this particular bid, but any other bid, anything coming our way. So we have contractual services that are coming due for expiration. Again, foresight, we're kind of making sure that we can manage expectation in the event we, have to go through an emergency or renew or get it out to bid on time.
But for this one specifically, you've had several conversations about what to do in the event that the bid, I'm going to take you back in time. Okay,
go ahead.
I'm going to take you all the way back in time to September 2021, and then I believe that's when the protest gets launched, right? So now there's a stay. Okay, did you guys have a discussion about what to do in the event that you didn't have the RFP awarded
yes.
by November 1?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What did that entail?
It was primarily what were we going to do, what course of action would we take, given the circumstances that we were going to be facing in the event we did lose services to the conveyance systems in its entirety.
Who drove the conversation?
So the plan was to have us actually sit down and mitigate how we would be able to maintain services with the existing contract.
Who drove the conversation?
Our conversation was driven by internally within the airport.
Who organized the meeting?
Our organizing meeting was with our airport service manager.
Council in that meeting?
No.
Was that the only time that you got together and started to discuss what to do in the event that you wouldn't have an outsourced vendor to handle baggage handling?
The only one that I could recall, yes, sir.
Did you have one? So, I'm really bad with timeline. I think some 90 days after that initial emergency procurement, there would have been a public meeting to talk about extending the emergency, I believe it was. Was there any discussion before that public meeting about, what are the alternatives to handling this instead of just extending the procurement?
Not to my knowledge, other than what I just mentioned earlier.
Okay. Now, so you're the ATM?
Yes, sir.
So, and that's not the automated teller.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right? Okay. So, Port Terminal Manager.
Correct.
Okay. So, if anything is going on, you know about it.
Yes, sir. 24/7.
24/7. They're not beepers anymore, right? So you're on the cell phone. Okay. When you guys are, let me ask it this way. How long have you been in budgeting?
Zero, really, which is experienced by way of input and recommendations to budget. But as far as handling budget and all
no,
that.
No, not handling it, but understanding that I got to get my numbers in.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much been your job.
My only input would be proposed budget to, again, to be able to manage anticipated operations at the airport.
And then you go cry to JQ, right, if
That's
you don't
correct.
Have enough money?
That's correct. Sir.
Okay. I guess I'll say it this way. How much does this baggage handling thing actually, is the provision for this yearly?
To be honest with you, I don't know that answer.
Okay. Would that be part of what you do?
No, not necessarily. It would just primarily go through our regular procurement process and then it would be handled from there.
So you don't have any input of like, no, we need at least $2 million for these bags.
Well, I have some say on as far as parts, manufacturers recommended parts and stuff to that effect, but not the overall price tag in itself, no.
Well, how about for just making sure you have stuff that works?
Yes, as far as hoses, backup, equipment, motors, manufacturers recommended parts, yes, I have.
What's the methodology behind that? You just have like a critical level or something? How do you manage that?
It's actually based on the manufacturer of the equipment. So they come up with what they call a manufacturer's recommended parts list. So these are items that are typically consumables, let's say belts, like, you know, fan belts, filters, things of that effect. So it's not primarily your critical components per se, like electronic tech boards. These are more like items that, what, you know, through wear and tear.
Normal wear and tear. Correct. Right. So you have like a normal wear and tear sketch. So this baggage handling system is pretty predictable?
To some extent, but as far as technology-wise, I kind of can't really answer that question, though.
Oh, you know all the corners of the airport, though, right?
Correct.
Okay, but, I mean, is what a baggage handling system would go through, it's pretty predictable?
Yes, sir.
And it's got a straight line, usually we'll call it a straight line, sort of declining, right, value or depreciable value. So... for this, you know, we had one answer that they thought that this thing should last about 15 years. How much do you think this, how long do you think this system lasts?
As far as the usable service life of this system, I really don't know what it is right now. I don't even know for certain when it was actually, because again, I just came back 2.5 years ago, so I really don't know the real history of when that was either re-renovated or reintroduced, or actually were there new components, or, you know, I really don't know the
age. Okay, let's do it this way then. I mean, you've been through many airports.
Correct.
Guam's the second most complex one in the region.
Yes.
Based off of your experience, given this system, how new it is, it's, I heard it was installed in 2008.
Okay.
Right. How long do you think, based off of your experience, would you expect baggage handling system like this of similar complexity to last?
I would say, to again, my observation from other airports, I would say usable service life of maybe 15 to 20 years if maintained appropriately and in accordance with manufacturer's recommendations.
Okay. And so that 15 to 20 years, are you making, from a budget standpoint, you're making a provision for each year on that 15 to 20 years for maintenance, right?
And yes.
Now, is that included with the RFP, or is that we'll buy the parts that you need? You just show up to work every day and make sure the belts run.
They're actually through as needed requirement as far as parts.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's say, for example, we had we had two burnout motors on, let's say, straight belt number two, and then again it was due to let's say under voltage. So now they go out and they take the recommended manufacturer's parts list, where we have two motors on hand. We take those two available motors, replace the two burnout motors, and then now we got to replenish those two motors to maintain stock.
I guess my question is it predictable?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything about this baggage handling system that makes it unique? As, you know, of course it's unique to Guam. It's, you know, it's that kind of uniqueness, right? But I mean, it's like, the question I asked to one of the witnesses earlier, is it like a Frankenstein? Has it got different parts all over the place? That, you know, it's like your Chevy that's a 63, but you got a 68 rear end kind of thing? Or is it pretty straight up, it's like one type of machine, and you could either get the A model, the B model, or the C model?
Exactly. It's pretty much, again, standard throughout the whole airport systems, throughout the main United States, even throughout this region.
So they just had somebody show up and say, okay, we need this distance, mm-hmm. we need to turn here at this angle,
correct.
That kind of thing, right?
Correct.
Expected traffic, studies, yes. This is how much it could do. So this thing's completely predictable.
Mm-hmm.
So you being part of operations, you really don't touch sort of financial reporting or any of that kind of stuff?
No, other than our end-of-year budget, and that's kind of what you were alluding to with your question, you know, where's my involvement when it comes to budget? So it would typically be at the end of the year, year-end fiscal year, where I will take a glance and take a look at it, get input from the various divisions as to what it is we're going to anticipate to maintain operations for that new fiscal year.
Does anybody ever sit back and say, okay, you know, for the next, I don't know, 15 years, we're going to run the airport this way, these machines are going to come down, these machines need to get replaced, boom, boom, boom. Is there a snapshot of, like, the master plan like that? Does anybody have that in their mind at the airport?
We actually have, we just completed or getting ready to have an approved master plan hopefully by the end of this month. But we also have other internal mechanisms with regard to end-of-life products at the airport. A good example would be we have a 2007 ARF truck right now that's currently in operation. So again, end-of-life, that's anticipated. So things of that effect. Similarly, with our jetways, we have several jetways that are actually aged jetways that, again, is going to require a replacement due to its life cycle.
Now, so that's all based off of what's predictable, right?
Correct.
No one-offs, no typhoon sort of provisions, yeah. That type of thing.
It's just anticipated end of life.
Okay. Now, if you were to find out, we're not going to have the baggage handling system that we thought we were going to have, could you find a way around that?
It would probably
besides manually.
There would be no other way around it, sir. Not that I could ingeniously think about right away. But again, it would have to revert to manual. That would be the only outcome, as was demonstrated after Moar.
And to your understanding, this was an emergency procurement?
To my understanding, yes.
Okay, and why was it an emergency procurement?
I don't know the details of why it was. All I know was I needed the baggage conveying system to be maintained.
Okay. Any questions from the lawyers?
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Rages, thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.
Can we excuse the witness?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Richard.
You can go back to the airport.
Okay, good.
Get up there. I'm going to call you up on my bag,
so maybe. Okay, sir. How do we know which conveyor belt down to stand next to when we get at the carousel? That was my.
This is
one of the closest? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
Mark.
Okay, any more witnesses, Mr. Brennan?
At this point, the purchasing agency has put forth its defense of the procurement. We're going to make sure that it's
okay. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, we have a couple. Let me just go. Okay.
We're off the record at 4:05 p.m. We're back on the record at 4:08 p.m.
Okay, Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Mr. Hearing Officer, we call Rodney Payette to the stand.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you.
We have you.
Let's go.
Good afternoon, Mr. Payette. Can you please, just state your full name for the record?
Rodney Payette.
And where do you work?
I work at Menzies Aviation.
And what is your position there?
The general manager.
Can we have you scoot up a little closer just to make sure you get it?
So you said you're the general manager?
Yes.
Okay. Can you give me an idea what your duties are as general manager for Menzies?
So I oversee the day-to-day operations of the different departments that we have up there, as far as from the VHS to RAP to cargo, pack services, and so on.
Okay. How many years have you been with Menzies?
Well, I've been at the airport with Menzies, formerly Lockheed, over 30 years. Had a break in a year service in 99, came back in 2001.
Okay. How many employees does Menzies have?
Roughly around right now, maybe 280, 280.
Okay. And is it broken up into different departments?
Yes.
Okay. Can you go through the name? What different departments is it broken up into?
So we have the VHS department. We have the interplane department.
VHS, what do you mean by VHS?
The baggage handling system.
Okay, and then interplane?
Interplane department, which is the fueling of the aircrafts.
Okay.
Passenger service. We provide ramp services, cargo services, and GSC services.
What are GSC services?
These are our mechanics that fix the equipment.
Now, with respect to the baggage handling services, how many employees work for that portion of the company?
23.
Okay. And how are those broken up into different kind of job categories or sub-departments?
Yes.
Which ones?
So there's the encoders. They have
control room, and they have technicians. Okay. Let's go one by one through each of those. What do the encoders do?
The encoder's responsibility is to scan the baggage. If the system does not recognize a bag tag, then their job is to scan a bag and send it to the assigned peers.
Okay. And how many encoders do you have working in that department?
If I'm not mistaken, I believe 3 or 4.
Okay. And with respect to control room, how many employees are in that department?
In the control room, well, there's a, I'm not sure the exact number, maybe 4 to 5 as well.
Okay. And what do these employees do?
The control room, they monitor the system. So just what's going on with the system electronically and robot. Just paying attention to the monitors. So if there's jams that need to be responded to, anything that's gets called in as far as any breakdowns, they would call the technicians to have them go check it out.
Okay. Now finally, the technicians. How many technicians does Menzies employ?
I believe up to 15, maybe.
And what do the technicians do?
Technicians' responsibility is to maintain and repair the system.
Okay. By repairing and maintaining the system, what do they do?
So they would change out mechanical parts or motors, photo-wise, so to speak. So conveyor belts if they're broken.
You said photo-eye?
There's a photo eye that recognizes the bag passage. So the photo eye is in op or whatever, or damaged, they'll just replace it.
Okay. Let me know if I'm wrong. The photo eye, I guess, is read the tags on the bag and determine where it goes, or?
I think it just, I'm not a technician, so I think it recognizes a baggage if it's went through that area.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So with respect to the repairs, do these repairs ever involve any construction work, to your knowledge?
No.
Okay, so if there was a wall that needed to be taken down at the airport, would that be one of the lenses?
No, that would not.
Okay, if there needed to be construction work to build anything, or a wall where there wasn't one before, would that be Menzies' work?
No.
Okay. What about baggage handlers? Are those part of the baggage handling system?
No, that is with the ramp department.
Okay, and that's a separate department with Menzies?
Yes, these are ramp department that is responsible for loading bags, unloading bags into the aircraft.
Okay. And how long has Menzies had this contract?
Which one?
The baggage handling system contract.
I believe for over 20 some years.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to talk about one thing that's come up throughout the course of this today. Did you ever receive a notice to appear from the CLB?
To appear from the CLB?
The contractor's licensing board.
Appear to notice to come here?
No, to a meeting with the contractor's licensing board with respect to a complaint filed by JMI.
Yes.
Did you have a meeting with anybody from the CLB in response to that notice to appear?
The only meeting that we attended was with a lawyer, with you.
Okay. And do you know about when that meeting was?
I don't have the exact date. That's sometime in November of... I can't recall the date. Okay, sorry.
Does November 16, 2021 sound about right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember who was present at that meeting?
It was myself, Mildred Sigawet, our lawyer, Mr. Fenotnia, I believe, and Mr. Mesa.
Okay. Who is Mildred Sigawet?
Mildred Sigawet is our finance accountant.
Was there ever another meeting between you and anybody else at the CLB?
No.
Okay. Have you ever met Cecil Orsini?
No.
I have no further questions.
Okay, I guess I'll go first to the appellants on any cross.
I don't have any questions.
the airport?
I have no questions at this point.
Okay, a couple of questions. You said that Menzies had 280 employees?
Yes, sir.
Is the airport its only contract?
No, sir.
Who else does it have contract?
With airlines.
Okay.
For ground handling.
Oh, I see. Okay, okay, okay. But they don't have to hire you. The airports, the airlines don't have to hire you.
No, no, no.
How many does it take to handle the baggage handling system?
Right now we have 23 in there.
How long, in your estimation, would it take a similarly skilled company to come in and familiarize itself with the system and get things up and running?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I think it would take some time because the experience is needed for that. What are that area?
What kind of experiences?
I mean, just overall experiences, just within the system of having a system.
30 days enough to sort of figure it all out?
I'm not sure, sir.
If I were to take you and put you in another airport and ask you to handle the baggage handling system, how long would it take you?
If the system is familiar, then probably within 30 days.
Within 2 weeks, maybe?
Probably.
Within a week, maybe?
No, it probably takes time for
probably about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And how long have you been at, I know you probably provided this answer, but how long have you been in airport related?
Say since 1990.
And only in Guam?
Only in Guam.
And always with Lockheed, and then
it was Lockheed, and we changed names throughout the years. Now Menzies Aviation.
Menzies no longer with Lockheed.
No. Yeah.
So you've been handling this baggage handling system then since it was installed in 2008.
I was with the company, but I wasn't in that area.
What were you doing?
I was probably maybe doing wrap work. I was with wrapping in it.
Okay.
Probably.
Who was... now, at your level now, you have a pretty good grasp of what it takes to run that thing and...
what's going on there, yes.
Yeah. Is there anything that's hinky? You know what that means?
No.
I don't think the lawyers even know what hinky, because it's so flexible. Anything unique or peculiar about this system that makes it, like, you know, you got to get out and kick it three times, that like, you know, you need, like, the chewing gum in this part. Is there anything strange or unique about this system that requires a special skill?
No.
I don't want to make any questions.
Just a follow-up.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the onboarding process for new employees in your VHS division?
It goes through our HR process. So I know a little bit.
So when you bring new employees on into that division, you have to offer them training?
Training, interviews.
So they are trained in how
Yes.
And are you familiar with how long that process is?
Depending on the... the area they're at?
In VHS specifically.
Yeah, I mean, like if an encoder would be just the basic, maybe a couple weeks of training.
And the technician?
The technicians would probably take longer.
Do you have an estimation or are you aware of that?
It can maybe take about a month, maybe, just to get well rounded.
But assuming your other experienced technicians remain on?
Yes, they'll be the trainers, of course.
No further questions? No.
Anybody else follow up?
No questions.
Thank you so much, sir.
We have one more witness.
Okay,
I'll get it now.
We're off the record at 4:21 p.m. We're back on the record at 4:23 p.m.
Menzies calls the second witness, Mildred Sigala.
Okay, and thank you. Let's go ahead and swear.
Oh, yes. State your name. Mildred Sigala.
You are starting to swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I will.
Could you please just state your name for the record?
Mildred Sigala.
Can you spell your last name, too?
S-I-G-A-O-A-T.
Thank you. Where do you currently work?
Menzies Aviation.
Okay. And what is your position?
I'm the accounting manager.
How long have you worked at Menzies?
30 years.
Have you always been the accounting manager?
No.
Okay. What did you start?
As a passenger service agent. Okay. And then I did administration.
And then when did you become the accounting manager?
2018.
Could you kind of just describe sort of what your general work duties are as the accounting manager at Menzies?
I deal with the accounts payable, accounts receivable, finance portion, forecasting.
Were you involved in the dispute involving this, involving the, I guess with the CLB, the Contractors Licensing Board, the complaint that was filed by JMI?
I'm aware of it, yes.
Okay. So before we get into that, are you aware of whether Menzies has ever had a CLB license in the past?
Yes.
When did it have a CLB license?
It was a long time ago, I believe, when we had our jetway contract.
Is that why Menzies had a CLB license?
Yes.
Okay. Which CLB licenses was it required to have?
There's quite a few licenses within that contract.
Okay. So after a certain point, did Menzies no longer have the jetway contract with the airport?
Correct.
So after Menzies no longer had the jetway contract, is that why the CLB licenses eventually were allowed to lapse? Or...
Yes, correct.
To your knowledge, was having a CLB license a requirement of the airport RFP for the baggage handling system?
No, it was not.
Okay. Again, I want to cover just one other thing that's come up earlier here. Have you ever been to the CLB for purposes of an investigation meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember when that was?
November 2021.
Okay. Is November 16th sound about right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember who was present at that meeting?
It was myself, Rodney Payette, yourself, Mars, Finotnia, and I believe in Andrew Mesa.
Okay. Was Cecil or Cindy there?
No.
Was Nita Bailey there?
No.
Was there ever any other meeting that you had at the CLB, or that Menzies had at the CLB?
No.
Have you ever met Cecil or Cindy before?
No, I have not.
Okay. No further questions.
Jim.
The previous contract you had, I'm sorry, my name is Joseph Rosano, and I represent JMI.
Okay.
Sorry about that. The contract for the JAG, was that with the GIAA?
Yes.
Okay. And were you involved in the, I guess, the bid or the procurement to win that contract?
No, I was not.
Okay. What's your involvement in procurement?
As far as presently, I would be involved just because of the financial aspect of it.
Okay.
But not for the jetway.
Okay, not for the jetway. Were you involved in the current procurement for the baggage handling services?
Yes.
Were you involved in the emergency procurement for the baggage handling services?
I believe with my corporate office. They're the ones who handled that.
Okay, so you weren't involved in that?
Besides providing information that they needed.
Okay. Do you have any responsibilities at Menzies for reviewing the procurement package?
Our corporate office normally handles that process. We have a contracts person.
Okay. So there, you have a contracts person that works for Menzies. You did not review the requirements of the procurement package for the baggage handling services. Is that correct?
Our contracts person is the one who who reviewed that.
And that's not you?
No.
Who is that?
At the time it was for this particular was Ian Kraft.
Ian Kraft. Does he live on Guam?
No.
And he's, I guess, your contracts person who figures out how to respond to the procurement. And then does Mr. Kraft, as part of that response to the procurement, does he like email you and say, hey, Mildred, I need some financial information or whatnot so I can put this thing together, and do you assist him or no?
If there's anything that he requests that I can handle, yes. But normally they will get that information from our corporate office as well, financial statements.
So you really have no involvement in the procurement process?
It depends on what they ask of me.
So you don't have any responsibilities for procurement other than if you're asked to assist, you do the best job you can because you love your job and you've been working for Menzies for 30 years, right?
I do what I, any information that I can provide being here at the local office, I do so to help our corporate office.
Okay. I think I almost had no questions, but I think I just had one question. And I'm not sure you can answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And I need to come at it three different ways. So it's going to be, it's not just one question. But so you were involved in this procurement to some extent.
To some extent, yes.
Okay. Now, when did Menzies first sort of like say, this license thing might be an issue?
Only when we got wind of the protest or got notification of the protest.
Only when you got notification of the protest?
Yes.
So when you got notification of the protest, did anybody say, you know what, Leonard, let's just go get it?
We contacted our corporate office. They recommended that we get legal representation, and that's when we contacted.
I
don't
want to know about what
your
lawyers are telling you. So when the licensing thing came up, you ran it up the flagpole, right? You went to corporate.
Corporate, yes.
Okay, correct. And corporate said whatever corporate said.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
No questions.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ms.
Thank you.
And we have no further witnesses.
Okay. Can we take a quick break while I consult with the staff?
Sure.
And then we'll just gather back and then shut it down. Okay.
We're off the record at 4:31 p.m. We're back on the record at 4:36 p.m.
Okay. I guess no more witnesses, right? From anybody? No
rebuttals,
none. Okay. You guys didn't see the need for oral summation. You're going to turn in, I'm asking you guys to hand in proposed findings and conclusions. And then I also am going to ask for a little further briefing, if that's okay. Now, when I look at the definition of emergency, I would like to know, are there any other analogs like this one where the emergency is brought about either through litigation or a stay or some event that's created by humans as opposed to like natural emergency? And are there any other cases where something like this was treated as an emergency? Okay. And secondly, in those events, if we can find them, how long did the emergency continue? And of course, not just that there was a sufficient analog, but you know, what any analysis of why it was called an emergency when it was a human created event. Is there anything else? We're just going to have to schedule up when these are due, right?
Yes.
And I have, sorry, one issue related to that.
Yeah.
We vacated the remedies brief deadline and we never reset it. I'm happy to incorporate it into the findings unless you want a separate meeting, but that was...
You can incorporate it.
So now... One omnibus brief with the FAFL...
Well, I think the findings and conclusions separate.
Separate, okay.
Right, but then the brief on...
Briefing and remedies can be together.
Well, FAFL remedies.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
FAFL remedies and then briefing on these questions, A and B.
And how long do you guys need?
So I was going to ask for at least 30 days.
Ooh.
I understand that. So the airport is continuing to get baggage services currently. But the reason I'm going to be honest, the reason for that, I am traveling at the end point here in October until the first week of November.
Didn't you guys hear you guys got lots of associates?
We don't have any.
No, I think that's the other firm. These places.
That's this
I don't think either party has an objection.
No, I'm just giving you a
appreciate.
I don't mind going that far out, but I'm going to also ask if the staff of the public auditor have any issues with going that far out.
So you're looking at November 13?
Yeah, probably the 13th because the 10th is Veterans Day.
Okay, I'll tell you though, I wouldn't like at least that first brief within the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
So that would make it 12 plus 14 is 26.
Okay. That's right. It's a good point.
Any other housekeeping we need to take care of? Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank the parties and the lawyers. I think this is an important case. So hopefully we get a good result.
Sorry.
The 17th? How's the 17th? For the brief?
Oh, for the,
or for the
findings?
For the findings.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
17th.
Okay, and then 26 for the brief.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hearing Officer. Thank you.
We're off the record at 4:42 p.m.
Thank you so much, guys.